The Subcommittee on Energy and Commerce, chaired by Oregon's Greg Walden, voted to forward H.R. 2666, a bill that blocks consumers from being protected by internet service providers, to Congress. Walden held a hearing early in January that explored the dynamics of the legislation. We are airing Walden's opening comments from last month's meeting, as well as a prepared statement from trade group affiliate Elizabeth Bowles before KBOO reporter Robin Ryan's interview with Tim Carr of Free Press about the development and the spectrum auction coming up at the end of March.
H.R. 2666, Representative Kinzinger's No Rate Regulation of Broadband Internet Access Act, seeks to codify the assurances of FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler by prohibiting the FCC from using its new authority under the Open Internet Order to regulate rates charged for broadband. Simply put, this is what President Obama and Chairman Wheeler have stated publicly, time and again, but put in statutory form. President Obama, in his now infamous YouTube directive to the FCC, directed the FCC to reclassify broadband under Title II, quote, while forbearing from rate regulation, close quote. In front of multiple congressional committees in both the House and the Senate, Chairman Wheeler has continually repeated what he stated succinctly in his statement when the FCC adopted the Open Internet Order that, quote, that means no rate regulation, no filing of tariffs, and no network unbundling, close quote. H.R. 2666 simply does what President Obama and Chairman Wheeler cannot. It binds future chairmen to live by the commitments that this administration has made as to how the sweeping authority the FCC granted itself is to be used. Some have been critical of this bill, seeking to change the language to preclude the use of tariff authority, an authority the FCC has already forborne from using, while leaving the Commission and its Enforcement Bureau free to use enforcement authority to regulate rates. Rate regulation, by after-the-fact second-guessing, is rate regulation nonetheless.
Central Arkansas, including small, underserved rural Arkansas communities such as Sardis, Valonia, and Shannon Hills. Our members use unlicensed spectrum primarily to provide broadband to underserved areas that are not cost-effective for traditional wireline companies to serve. And they operate in diverse communities like Scott, Arkansas, Stony Bridge, Ohio, and LeGrand, Oregon, all of which are very small towns. Scott, for example, has 72 people. There are hundreds of other places where service from a WISP may be the only terrestrial means to access the internet, and the vast majority of our members have built their networks without the benefit of federal subsidies. Under any definition, nearly all of WISPA's members, including my company, are small businesses. Some WISPs have only a handful of employees who do everything from climbing the towers to doing the accounting to customer service. According to the FCC, 17 broadband access providers serve 93% of the population. The remaining 7%, 21 million people, is served by the over 3,000 broadband internet access providers that are considered small ISPs. As Congresswoman Eshoo said, what's going on in rural America is critical. We have to get broadband into rural America, and the 3,000 small ISPs are bringing that service to those people. WISPA believes in an open internet and in the effectiveness of the 2010 light touch regulatory regime. My company has never throttled, never capped usage, nor required anyone to pay to prioritize traffic. The FCC's reclassification of broadband as a Title II service was misguided, and WISPA is concerned about the effects that the 2015 order will have on small businesses. My company is already feeling the impact of the FCC's rules. Because of the risks and costs imposed by the order, Aristotle has reassessed its plan to expand its service, pending clarification of the regulatory regime. Instead of expanding our network to cover a three-county area, we are now deploying in three smaller communities. We cannot justify a greater investment in light of regulatory uncertainty. Small businesses, those with providers of 100,000 or fewer, are temporarily exempt from the new enhanced disclosure requirements, but the uncertainty still exists. The FCC's decisions may have provided short-term relief, but the agency failed on two occasions to make the exemption permanent, despite an overwhelming record supporting that move. First of all, the FCC received not a single comment alleging that small ISPs were flaunting the 2010 disclosure rules or that those rules were insufficient to protect consumers. In fact, the record showed that consumers, including rural consumers, would bear the cost burden as small businesses are forced to pass on additional regulatory compliance costs. The FCC failed to consider adequately the cost that will be imposed on consumers, which in turn led to the flawed decision to impose a one-size-fits-all regulatory regime that penalizes small business. Second, the FCC failed to analyze properly the impact on small businesses required by the Paperwork Reduction Act. It estimated, with no supporting facts, that the burden on small business would be less than that on larger businesses. That conclusion failed to grasp that small ISPs do not have in-house lawyers to review and understand the new disclosure rules, do not have the administrative staff to maintain the ongoing compliance, or the means to measure packet loss. Every dollar a small business spends on unnecessary regulatory compliance is a dollar not being spent on new hires, network upgrades, and expansion. Third, the record in the follow-on proceeding overwhelmingly supported a permanent exemption. Not a single one of the millions of consumers who wrote into the FCC in the months before open internet was adopted wrote to oppose a permanent exemption. The FCC has had two opportunities to get it right, and we would not be here today if the FCC had followed the clear record. But they didn't, and now small ISPs face the prospect of more FCC proceedings and continuing uncertainty. As I sit here today, WISPA members have been declined funding. One of our members in Oregon was told by his bank that he would not be funded because they were uncertain about the regulatory regime. Other WISPA members have changed their business plans, cut back or redirected investment funding in order to hire regulatory counsel. The reality is clear. Imposing excessive and unnecessary burdens on small ISPs has dampened the very investment that has made broadband service to rural America possible. And as for rate regulation in H.R. 2666, WISPA supports any legislation that would prevent the FCC from regulating the rates we charge our subscribers. Thank you.
Ms. Bowles, thank you.
This morning, a subcommittee in the House voted 15-11 to adopt the, quote, no rate regulation of broadband internet access. This was introduced by Illinois Republican Adam Kinzinger. Can you go over what impact this legislative product will have on the FCC's efforts to protect internet users from corporate misconduct?
Well, the bill itself is misleading, and that name that you read off is a mouthful, but what Representative Kinzinger and his colleagues in the House, at least the Republican side, are trying to do is strip away the Federal Communication Commission's ability to enforce internet user protections to prevent cable companies, to prevent powerful phone companies that in many parts of this country have a monopoly over internet access, to prevent the FCC from stopping them if they decide to gouge consumers, to overcharge consumers, or abuse our rights as internet users in any way. Now, it's cloaked as a legislation to prevent rate regulation of internet access, but if you read the language of the bill, you see that it takes away a lot of the protections that the FCC won when they passed open internet rules in 2015.
6 days ago, Fred Upton and Greg Walden forwarded a letter to the FCC and refer in the body of it to a newly minted definition of broadband, which the agency determined was not being deployed appropriately. These two members indicate the overtures by the FCC trouble them and contend the policy proposed renders speeds for broadband a variable in the regulatory equation. What does that mean?
Well, as more and more internet users use the internet in more interesting ways, over time, more people have gotten access to high-speed internet services. We're using it to watch videos and listen to music and do all sorts of new media things. And so the FCC had revised its definition of broadband upward. In order to qualify as broadband access, it had to be a certain speed uploading and downloading. And the cable industry, which has a lot of members in Congress who act as its mouthpieces, is upset by that definition of broadband access because they've often claimed that the United States has the fastest, the cheapest, the best broadband services in the world. But if you compare that to the speeds and the prices that people in other developed countries pay, in particular in parts of North Asia, parts of Europe, you'll see that the services in the United States are often too slow. We don't have a lot of choice. We end up paying too much for speeds that are often limited. So the FCC was attempting to redefine what truly good broadband was. And the industry doesn't like that because they think that giving some people access to very slow and expensive speeds is good enough. So when the FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, who's talked a lot about increasing competition, bringing prices down, making broadband more affordable to everyone, when he starts acting on those wishes, they like to characterize that as some sort of government interference, when in fact all he's trying to do is make high-speed internet services more affordable and accessible to everyone in the United States.
Before I ask you about the upcoming Spectrum auction, can you share with our listeners what that is, how it works, and then how this debate impacts that process?
People who are familiar with Spectrum, at least in the history of how it's used and how it's regulated, are familiar with the history of Spectrum for radio and television broadcasting. As soon as radio broadcasting became a thing, the Federal Communications Commission saw as its role licensing access to the airwaves. And that started with radio. They provided license to radio broadcasters. And then as television came along, they provided licenses to television broadcasters. There's also a considerable public interest obligation that came with those licenses. These licenses were given to TV stations for free. But what has happened over the last 2 decades is increasingly people are using wireless devices. Smartphones have brought in a new age of mobile internet access, and in order for the airwaves to meet the demand of widespread mobile use, we need to get access to new spectrum. So a lot of the broadcast spectrum that was used for television and radio has been narrowed to narrower bands. Now that we broadcast digitally, it takes up less spectrum. The extra spectrum that is available, the FCC has asked broadcasters to make available for a public auction. The license to access that spectrum will be auctioned, and companies that run wireless services like Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile will be very eager to buy that spectrum. They plan to pay billions and billions of dollars. So we are now in a process of preparing for that auction, the auction of old television broadcast spectrum for new uses by wireless carriers. So there has been a political debate about how that spectrum is auctioned off, what sort of requirements we put on the use of that spectrum. We're in the middle of that debate right now.
Do you know how many have registered as potential participants in this auction, and if companies like Comcast and Verizon are on that list?
Well, I know that those wireless carriers are all interested in participating. What we're in the process of doing right now is getting the broadcast companies themselves, the television stations that own local broadcast licenses, to indicate their interest in handing back their license to use Spectrum. So in the first quarter of this year, we'll be hearing from broadcasters about their intentions. Are they interested in having the spectrum that they once used for television broadcasting be auctioned off for carriers like Quest and Verizon? So we're in the process of just figuring out what's going to be available, and then as we get later into the year, we'll actually start establishing the process for bidders to participate and actually proceed with those auctions. The spectrum auction is really important because there's another piece of it that we need to think about is not only will you make spectrum that was formerly used for television and radio available for wireless carriers, these very large companies, but there's also you can use spectrum in an unlicensed way. Many of us are familiar with that. We go to our local coffee shop or a public park that may have public Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi also uses spectrum, but uses it in an unlicensed way. That is, it's not controlled by one company, but anybody who has a device, maybe your laptop computer, it may be your smartphone, that can get access to that spectrum can easily log on, and you don't need to have a subscription with one of these large carriers. So as we talk about future auctions of spectrum, we need to think about also setting aside spectrum that can be used in an unlicensed way. That's important for cities. It's important for libraries that are trying to offer, in many cases, free public Wi-Fi to people who come to their offices. You can learn more about the process either by going directly to the Federal Communications website, which is at fcc.gov. You can also learn more about our work at Free Press at www.freepress.net.
I've been talking with Tim Carr. He's the Senior Director of Strategy at Free Press. For more information, you can visit their website at freepress.net. Adam Kinzinger is a Republican from Illinois. He was first elected in 2010 and has raised near $7 million. Comcast ranks in the top five of contributors over the course of his political career. He's raised, in total, near $7 million in campaign contributions. I'm Robin Ryan, and you're listening to KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:58, and next would be Rose City Native Radio. Stay tuned.
K
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge in Portland. Holding On to the Sky is an original play about earthquake preparedness, which weaves together stories of disaster, gentrification, health access, addiction, recovery, and resilience. Again, that's Holding On to the Sky, February 5th through 7th and 12th through 14th, 8 p.m. at the Peninsula Odd Fellows Lodge, 4834 North Lombard Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Digital Indigenous Radio Show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell an Indian first then?
Good evening, good evening, Portland. You are listening to Rose City Native Radio. And this is not the familiar voice that you love and like. This is not Jackie. This is Delphine. I'm Delphine Crescenzo, and I'll be your host this evening as Jackie and Ender and Alicia take care of other businesses. But, you know, they've left for me a lot of great songs, and Roar of the Earth we will listen to